to over to Galway and to a native of Ardrahannan County Galway, a girl, an author who has lived in the west and the south of County Galway, and who undertook an historic project in going from post to pillar, in taking and getting the elderly for, you know, an oral historic narratives. Pauline?
Yes?
Pauline Birmingham Scully, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
How did you get started anyway, and what was, you know, your inspiration yeah. and your yeah. initiative?
Well, I returned to college as a mature student, and I took oral history as a module. And the thing was, go out and tape an elderly person in my community. And it was difficult enough to think of somebody. But I did a story, and I fell in love with the idea. And I just started collecting the stories myself. And I just, well, I mean, they were all neighbours. I would have known them, most of them, but I didn't know anything about them.
Yeah.
And their stories were just so simple and so beautiful. And I mean, rural Ireland is so... Everyone was the same. Everyone, as long as they had enough food to eat, and they were happy. And they married the men next door, or men across the field, and it was just lovely, fascinating stories of rural Ireland that's no longer with us.
Yeah. It is well known that, you know, for many of us who grew up without the benefit of television and
water,
in many cases
yeah.
Of even radio,
yeah.
that the stories were told around the fireplace,
yeah.
in particularly in rural Ireland, and I think it wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that on the west coast of Ireland, you know, from Donegal, Mayo, Galway, and
yeah, sure.
Right down the west coast,
yeah.
there were great stories.
Story houses.
And
yeah.
Embellishment was, you know, was not unusual. But what did you find, what was the common theme as you went and spoke to with the older people?
I think visiting houses, the people calling in, neighbours, community, and that's all gone now, and it's so sad. And everyone knew everything about everybody, and everybody helped everybody. And life was just so simple. As long as they had enough to eat, and they were just kind of happy in themselves. And there might have 10 or 12 kids in each house, and they just all survived.
Yes. Many of them portraying sadness about immigration and how their kids...
No, and I was surprised an awful lot of women, and particularly women, left Ireland when they were 16, 17, that age group. And they just felt they had to go to get out of Ireland,
yes.
to get away from home. I suppose that maybe there's no chance to get married or something, or they had no money. But they wanted to work, I think, women. And a lot of them went away and were very happy, but all happy to come back.
Yes. Well, the returning immigrants, you know, to Ireland, I suppose the overwhelming majority might have been those who returned from England or Scotland. Or,
England, yeah.
Yeah. Did you
Most
come?
Most didn't return from the States.
Yeah. Well, of course, many had established their roots
yeah.
here, including... You know, myself and those of us who consider ourselves very much a part of the Irish American community, never forgetting where we came from.
Yeah.
But what, when you began to speak with the, you know, with the elderly and to get their stories, was there somewhat of a reluctance in the beginning. Was it a slow start?
No, I found it very easy, and I just went in very simply, and I just kind of started off with where they were born, and everybody told me a lovely story. Nobody didn't want to tell the story. And everybody, now all, most of the people are dead now, and the families are so happy that I kept their stories.
Yes. So basically, what did you do? You took a tape recorder with you, or?
Yeah, I went around and knocked at the door, or I'd meet people in the street, and I just asked them, do you know anyone that talked to me? Or I know people that knew somebody, or I just...
Yeah.
People are coming to me now asking me to do stories.
The stories, told in the first person, you had so many. Take one of them, the Michael Fury,
He had a lovely story. All the stories were lovely.
Yeah. Some of them... divulged rather personal stories. They didn't hold anything back. There's no trace of pretense in the stories. And I think you got you continue because you're still doing it. I think you got a better feel for their life stories as opposed to the stories that we grew up with in around the fireside, where there was a great embellishment of stories, not about themselves, but stories about immigrants, those who had gone to England, those who had gone to Scotland for seasonal work in picking potatoes or crops. These were open confession. Well, most of your stories here, one could say they're telling it as it is and as it was.
Yeah, and I never held anything back, and they just told me the truth. And like some people got married, they weren't happy married, but they still they stayed married. And they just had to get married, and married anyone really in the end.
Yeah.
And they said that to me too, and they weren't that happy, but they stuck it out.
They definitely did. What was their reaction, say, to the influence of the church in Ireland, the Catholic Church?
Oh yes, a few spoke. They said they had no real interest in religion, just they were made of mess, and they were made. They were afraid of the priests, and a lot of them were afraid of getting pregnant, and they tell me all that stuff now.
Yeah. Did they?
So important.
Yeah. Did they feel somewhat oppressed by the church? Were they? Was there a kind of a fair balance in saying, well, the church might have had its faults, it might, but to offset that. Their influence in education through, the national schools, that didn't do anybody any harm.
That's what they felt, and well, they all had very bad experience in national schools. I'd say 90% of them had a very bad experience.
Yeah.
You know, beast badly, but didn't really talk about religion in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the politics? What about 1916 and the aftermath of the Easter Rising?
A few spoke about the Black and Tans now, and I remember the people being shot around the area and Black and Tans coming to their houses.
Now, their version of the dreaded Black and Tans. Were there varied reactions? Were there some who were not affected at all? And
I suppose it was, different areas, different areas of the county, and it's kind of romanticized being in other areas, and there were, I suppose, there were rebellions going on all around the country at the time in different pockets.
Yeah. And, now the black and tans somehow escapes. Is that well known or written about?
Not a lot, really.
No.
Every now and again it kind of pops up, but not too much.
Yeah. And to define the influence or the scourge of the black and tans, were there different versions? Were there a terrible part of our history?
Well, we have a few cases here in the locality, like three or four cases that I would have known of that would have been murdered by black and tans, and like that every now and again they talk about them. And
yeah,
but
how did they define the black and tans?
I suppose they were just not wanted the area, and they were coming into the area, and they were killing Irish people and causing trouble, and that's what people were afraid of, especially the older people were very afraid of them.
Yeah, if you take that in the aftermath of the Irish famine and the consequences and the lasting effect of the famine and of British oppression, indeed it took a long time, and many died with a tremendous amount of bitterness. Towards Britain, and yet so many emigrated to to Britain.
Very well over there.
Yeah, and they made tremendous progress, and in fact still do.
Yeah.
Did you find that as you went from parish to parish and areas, of course, of counties in
Galway.
Ireland and in Galway, you would have different reactions, and of course they were known as parishes rather than areas. Did you find that a lot of the stories and a lot of what you had collected in oral history was, excusing the pun, was parochial? Did you find that a lot of people, not that geographically far from one another, might have had different life experiences?
Yeah, parishes were different. But the thing, the thread that ran through most of the stories, like, an awful lot of people were related.
Yes.
And nearly, when you go through the whole book, somebody's related to somebody, or some person relates to a few people in the book.
Yeah,
and they didn't like that. They didn't travel far to meet new partners. They might went to the next parish or the next village, but then there'd be rivalry in parishes, and they wouldn't go with the different. You wouldn't mix with other parishes.
Well, of course, if you today, if you look back on exactly what you're referring to there, you would have a great number of people in a parish, including our own, where you would have numerous families of, say, Melodies or Gallaghers, that, in fact, had to be distinguished with nicknames.
Extra names, or
extra names, so people would know what it is you identify them.
The bones or the doves or whatever,
Was there, did you find that in your research that music in the household or in
the household? House dances, barn dances, the threshing dances, that's where the highlights of their years.
Yeah.
All the neighbours coming in and all the women coming in cooking and baking and dancing all night, and very little drink that time. Quite a few battles.
Yes, but there would be also the concept of the mehel.
Yeah.
The mehel indeed was, I suppose, the short version now is the mehel meant that at harvest time, or indeed throughout the year, that neighbors, in fact, it was a good barter system if you look back on it, because neighbors would get together. You mentioned earlier the thrashing, of the corn, and many, of course, I think historically, the mehel would have originated by, say, those who had large families, maybe widows, maybe head of household who went to England and didn't bother coming back. There was no money exchanged for their services, and indeed, and where you had very large families and others might have more, it was entwined with great Christian charity. It was something that they did, and it was again, it had very much had to do with the sense of humor, with storytelling, with music, with dancing, because that was and of course that would have been long before the establishment of the dance halls. Much of it indeed credited to the Albert Reynolds and his brother, and the concept of the dance halls. And indeed, if you went up to Mayo, Monsignor Horn, who for Knock, who had very wild dreams of building an airport up in Knock, he had nothing against establishing dance halls and making those, a source of revenue, for Knock. Did you have? Did you find in some villages where people didn't kind of get along with some of their neighbors? Were they kind of were they open about that, or was that something?
They were, but in some cases, no, I did not push it in because I could be liable. But they would be given out about neighbors, and it was, I didn't like that. Now, I wouldn't include that. They'd name them, and I didn't.
Oh, your book, you started. Did you know that you were going to have a series?
Just started off with one story, and I just developed, and I just loved it. I just kept collecting them. I just kind of collected them for myself, more so.
Yes.
And then I had them. I said, God, I have to do something with them.
Yeah.
And people were happy to allow me to get them printed.
Now, were there some who you spoke with who may have had second thoughts when they...
One woman in particular, she said to me, she didn't want it published, so I didn't, and I won't.
Yeah. And were there those, when they got the book, who felt that maybe you went a little bit overboard, or in hindsight?
No, not one. I had one bad response. Everyone loved what I did.
Yeah.
And they thought, just oral history of our county here, and it's just lovely to have it. And it's lovely for the grandchildren and the next generation to see what life was like.
Absolutely.
Changing so quickly.
At New York University, Glucksman Ireland House here had a lot of oral history, from Irish immigrants, Irish Americans, and they have a bottomless pit of oral archives, which are very...
Well, there's two books left in there. A man came to the launch in the Bronx, and he bought two books for the Glucksman.
Yes. I know. They're very...
He studied Irish, so he bought two books.
Now, are there, and you and Andy just said, and you were in Boston around the St. Patrick's season, many would have said maybe you ought to have come at another time because, you know, you're
very busy time, yeah.
Very busy time here.
It was, yeah.
How did you get on, how did you move from, you know, your first volume, you know, to feel that there was more where that came from, and in fact you have many of your chapters, you know, bring even though people were perhaps you know living barely living and having very little by way of just scraping along, let's say. Was there a sense of pride when their children and their grandchildren emigrated and did well? Those who didn't return, what was their attitude towards those?
They felt they were better off out of here if they weren't going to have a good life here.
Yeah.
And they felt they all did well, and they probably sent money home, and they would come home on holidays maybe every few years, and they were happy to see them and happy to see they were doing well.
Yeah.
Because I suppose they felt there was nothing here for them.
Was there much reference to family members who left Ireland and kind of disappeared and
never came home?
Never.
Yeah.
Well, not
but
only
my mother's
did
family, my mother's mother's. Eight of their siblings went to Boston, and only two ever came back on holidays. The rest never returned.
Yeah, and
the American Wake, sure.
The American Wake, which again was a custom when in Ireland, when somebody was leaving, particularly that this wouldn't have applied to Britain, but when people were leaving for America, Australia. Some places there was no expectation that they would be returning,
back,
even for a holiday.
No.
They were
gone.
There.
Yeah.
They were gone. Was there for some who emigrated, not by choice but by lack of opportunity in, you know, in growing up and say in farms where you made reference there to 10 and 12 children, obviously, that there was not a future there and it was time to go. Was there any reference to either family members or members of neighbors who, in fact, were not as successful, those who wound up particularly or notably in England, where they wound up marginalized, there were those who, in fact, lived a life of not only poverty but of, you know, the curse of the drink or
and living rough and probably dying on the street.
A
lot of them would have said that some guys went away and they never heard of them ever again. So they just assumed, I'm sure, they were dead.
They just assumed. And was there a sense of great hurt in families in knowing that not everybody who left did?
Well, they didn't really know because there's no form of communication. They didn't know, were they dead or alive?
Yeah.
They didn't know, they just might have just disappeared. They hadn't an idea.
Was there an expectation, and my guest friends, is Pauline Birmingham Scully, who has collected great, great many stories in County Galway, in a relatively small, tight-knit area. Was there, you know, quizzical meanderings of those who should have come home or those who would have come home, those expected, say, from England, that as they gained, many of them did extremely well, still do, say, in the building trades, or many of them became quite rich and prosperous. Was there any kind of, did you pick up on any kind of resentment that they could have well come home and, you know, or contributed more either to the parish or to families? Because we know that there were quite a few who did come home.
And they came home. They felt that they were happy they were doing well somewhere else.
Yeah.
They probably realized they wouldn't do as well if they were here, because we didn't have the...
Yeah.
Country wasn't great at the time, but...
Yeah. And then, now, you did make reference there to those who sent money home, those who sent parcels home, as they were known at the time, particularly, I think, from America, where they were very much appreciated and needed, and that would be, for instance, in clothing, in
Christmas time, parcels and household items.
Was there a sense of pride in knowing that immigrants who left did not forget the hardships of the
family? That was a big excitement. I'm sure they got money every few weeks from their children, and that kept them alive here.
Yes. And indeed, many of them did even better in the sense that they were in a position either to, you know, to get a car, to get a new house, to get... were they few and far between?
They were few. There wasn't that many now.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing was once one went, then they normally brought the next child and the next child, and a lot would have went from each family. So there might have been five or six together in the States at the time. So I suppose they didn't feel too isolated. No one had another sister or brother with them.
That's very much a part of our history where one immigrant not only came, say, to, again, this was worldwide, but let's stick with America. When they came here, there was an expectation that... the next or some of their siblings, many who they hardly knew at all, you know, some of them were in the cradle, or indeed some of them were born after they left. But there was an expectation that in addition to having to emigrate for, you know, lack of opportunity there, that was something, you know, that they did and were expected to do.
It's on the fair for the next one to go.
Did many of them talk about, you know, fairs and, you know, the towns, and many of them had not traveled much beyond their village, their town, their county. What was their reaction, say, to something that was very much a part of either the success or the failure of the house, in terms of growing vegetables, in terms of bringing, say, cattle
to the fair?
Did you get different reactions?
Everyone, they seemed to be very happy doing what they were doing. Everyone loved the fair. It was a big day in the village. And everyone in the family worked on the farm that time. Every child would have worked in the potatoes and the hay and everything. So everyone contributed. And it was just part of life. Everyone looked after each other, I suppose. And
yes. And indeed, markets... The fairs had more to do with cattle and horses and donkeys and whatever. The market was had more to do with pork, with pigs, with which became, you know, throughout the towns. You know, market squares were not just animals, but it also was a place where You could get turf, you could, you know...
buy everything, yeah.
Yeah. Are you working on more?
Yes, I am at the moment. I'm still collecting stories. So next week now, I hope to go back out on the road and collect a few. And
do you expect and have, as your books went along and as you were writing your books, many people were getting older. Did you try to get people, you know, who were, say, the next generation, and what they experience from, you know, from the older people, from the elderly?
Yeah, it's funny. The next generation, the stories are completely different. It's amazing the few years, the difference in stories. But I think that's television came into the houses, and people got educated, and the visiting stopped. So people are just living completely different.
How do we access them over here?
Well, if you want a signed copy, you can get them through bookhubpublishing.com, and they're on Amazon ebook at the moment.
All right, and for those who'd like to get in touch with you, because you can indeed get, you know, you can get information, friends, at email, and if you'd like to get in touch with my guests, publisher, and somebody who is unique in the sense that her writings and her stories are very local, in the sense that you're taking, you know, even a section of Galway, but you do portray in your narrative and in your recordings and in your oral history, stories that might apply to rural Ireland in general.
Yes,
well, very well orchestrated project. Did you think when you were collecting the first stories that the day would come when you would have an endless number of stories of different...
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I loved the idea of it. And I said, before people die, or before they leave this world, to get their stories, because once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah. And I think that many of us might indeed have reflection and say, you know, in hindsight, isn't it too bad that we didn't get the stories of life of those who came before us while they were alive.
That's correct. Yeah.
And you're doing it, and congratulations, and
thank you,
good
very
luck
much
to you. Again, friends, information, and if you're having difficulty in getting the books, I would suggest that you send an email to our guest, Pauline Birmingham at yahoo.uk, and I'd spell it out for you. It's all one word, PAULINEBERMINGHAM at yahoo.uk. Pauline, lovely to speak with you.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
And indeed, you didn't come from the wind. My brother Fintan in Kill, his wife Alva had been saying for a while, my God, not only would you enjoy the stories, but we'd be able to relate to many of them. Thank you, Pauline.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
All right, and friends, you're listening. Thank you. You're listening to Irish Radio Network USA.